Good. I'm going to record it. So we're going to actually pick up now with a bit of a new discussion. Until now, our framework for analysis has been the question of, you know, who is considered to be the owner of the schiros, you know, the owner of the kinyan, and that's going to determine who's going to bear the loss. That's the framework that we've been using for the Sugya and Kedushin, about a Pelash Achala, etc. What I want to look at now is a different way of allocating losses in these cases of you know, impossibility of performance and these unforeseeable or cases that are, you know, are not expected but maybe should have been foreseen by the parties. So how does the halakha generally allocate losses between the parties here? So, oh, we got Noah signed on, but it looks like we lost Gabe. Right? Hey, Noah.
That's just a good trade.
Got Noah, but we lost Gabe. Okay. So here's the point of departure for our discussion. We have the Sugya in Ayin Vav Amid Beis. The Sugya says, talks about a Sofer HaSomnim, and then it says, so you send the workers to, I guess, transport produce, but they don't find any produce to transport. You send the workers to work the field, and the field is just too wet for them to do the job. So the halakha says, the first day out here is no sein lahem scharan mishalem. You still have to pay them, even though they couldn't perform. So this halakha, or at least this statement in the Gemara 9 Vav Mebeis, seems to suggest that the loss is the Baal HaBayis's loss to bear. You hire the workers, you tell them to transport tvua. For some reason, the tvua is not transportable. You still have an obligation to pay them. And that would be consistent almost with the Kinyan idea, that the Baal HaBayis, like, holds the property right in a certain way, and that's why he still has to pay them. The Gemara then quotes a different view, is on Ayin Vav Mebeis as well. The Gemara says, Tani Tana Kami Derav, Nosan Lahem Schar Mishalem, Chabibi Yamar, I Hava Ana Lo Havi Yehivne Leklal. If I was there, I wouldn't have paid these guys anything, right? Which cuts in the exact opposite direction. It says, you hired workers to do a job, there's some impossibility of performance, the Baal HaBayis is excused from payment. And so the question is, how do you reconcile the view that says you have to pay them with the view that says you don't have to pay them? So the Gemara says, we could reconcile it along the following lines. Lo kasha, ha de saira la'arev mi de'orsa, ha de lo saira la'arev mi de'orsa. It depends whether the Baal HaBayis bears the loss or whether the poel bears the loss, turns on whether the, at least on the reading of most Rishonim, on whether the Baal HaBayis brought the poelim to the field and showed them the field the night before. So the Gemara seems to be saying, I hire workers and I say, look, I want you guys to work one of my properties, and then the property becomes swamped. So if I didn't designate which property or I didn't bring them to the property the night before, then the Baal HaBayis has to bear the loss. If, however, I hire Donnie and I say, Donnie, I want you to work this field tomorrow, and then some ones happens, the field gets flooded, then the loss is Donnie's to bear. That's the standard reading of the Rashi, of the Gemara. That's how Rashi reads it. And the Gemara says, Ki hada amar Rava. We have a statement of Rava to support this. Hai man de agra giri l'rifka. You hire workers to till a field. V'asa mitra umal yamaya. And then the rain comes and floods it so that it's impossible for the workers to do their job the next day. Isaire la'ara mi ursa. If I brought the workers to survey the field the night before, Pseida de Poalim. Then the loss is the Poalim's to bear. Lo saire la aramiursa, but if we didn't survey the field the night before, Pseida de Baal HaBayis, then the loss of the Baal HaBayis is to bear. So the question is, why should surveying the field the night before determine whether the loss is on the Baal HaBayis or on the Poa? So what do you guys think? And then we'll look at some formulations in the Rishonim. Why should surveying the field matter?
Could it be it's a way of
similar to something that we've said, I don't know if it was last or 2 years ago, but limit the scope of what the people are doing. Meaning, if you show them the field, then this is specifically what they are doing. As opposed to if you don't show them, then the Baal HaBayis really could have done any of any field he had or any type of work. The work is more general at that point.
Yeah, that's a really good suggestion, Donnie. I think that's one way of reading the distinction. And you'll see that's how Rashi at one point seems to describe it. So I think, and Dani, I think that's building off the analysis that we gave for the Ritva in the last Chabura, right? That whether the Baal HaBayis bears the loss or whether the Poel bears the loss depends on whether you hired the worker L'chol Melacha or whether you hired him for a specific task, right? That was the Ritva's analysis in Kiddushin. So Dani's suggestion here is, now look, if the Baal HaBayis hired the Poalim implicitly for any Melacha, then the Baal HaBayis has to bear the loss. If he hired the Poel for a specific task, you know, till this field, and then the field tilling becomes impossible, then the Baal HaBayis is excused from liability, right? Because you might say it's almost an implied condition of any payment that this field be tillable. Is that right, Donnie? Yeah, so look at Rashi. This is the formulation Rashi that supports that. Rashi says, this is in one formulation Rashi. I think there's different formulations in Rashi that cut in different directions, but let me just go for the Dani reading right now. Hadisire la'ara miursa, Rashi says, deha chazu inhu gufaihu, the workers themselves saw the field, v'yaminas kein nistakurlo. And then I think we can say that they were an implied condition of their being hired was that they are able to actually work the field. The hare lo yicholin, and they're not able to. So the condition makes it, the non-satisfaction of the condition discharges the contractual obligation, right? So Donnie's saying, if I hire you specifically to till this field, and this field is untillable, lo yicholin, amenaske nistakrila, and there's no obligation of the Baal HaBayis to pay. And then Rashi on Ayin Zayin Amid Aleph, when he talks about lo sire me ursa pseida de Baal HaBayis, right? If the Baal HaBayis didn't bring the poalim to survey the field, it's the Baal HaBayis' loss. Why? De amri le mi yemar de ladaita de hahu ara igrasan, right? Who said that you hired us specifically for this field? You hired us generally. And insofar as there's some sort of work that we can be employed for, right? Maybe there's a kinyan aguf on us and our person. You could send us elsewhere. So the loss is yours to bear. So Donnie, I think that's exactly what Rashi is getting at in this formulation. Excuse me. And you can see there are other Rishonim like the Or Zarua, I think, adopts this formulation as well. He has this Rashi idea. The Yachal HaPoel Lomar Tainli Sada Acheres VeEchbarba. Right? If you didn't specify which field the Poel is going to be working for, the Poel could say, hey, give me some other labor to do and I'll do that labor. So there's no presumption that impossibility of performance in this field should excuse the entire contract. So Donnie, I think that's a really nice suggestion. And I think that's one way to understand what the Gemara is getting at here. And it has it has support from Rashi's formulation and that Or Zarua. Does anybody have an alternative suggestion as to why Sire La'ara should make a difference? A different suggestion from Donnie's? Anybody else have a different approach?
Yeah, I'm glad. I had two ideas. The second one I'm having a little bit more trouble formulating, but the first one is kind of like the Balabatish Svara that we've been talking about before. The idea that like chronology plays a role in who becomes liable. So like, if we kind of like are looking back for causation and looking back like who is negligent at an earlier stage, so then we can kind of figure out who is responsible. So if he showed him the night before, so then that doesn't mean that he's no longer is responsible for that, because that was him scanning the landscape and seeing whether or not they're able to to actually work it. Whereas if he didn't show it to them, so then that's his own fault. So kind of like coming back.
Yeah. So no, I like what you're saying. The one thing I take strong issue with is you're characterizing it as Balabatish.
As the Balabatish.
Yeah. I think.
No, I kind of fused both ideas. Meaning the one of like, you know, chronology, I would say like that's more of like the or like the grammar, like causation.
Yeah. Let's step away from the Grama causation thing. But I like the second part of what you're saying. Ben, you wanted to chime in?
No, I just don't make fun of Donnie because he wants to be a lawyer.
Well, it looks like you want to be married to a lawyer, Ben. Yeah. You're on equal, you guys are on equal footing.
It's a dermatological lawyer.
It's getting, Ben's getting personal over here. So, where are your good southern manners, Ben? Come on. So let's build off Noah's idea here. So I think one way of understanding the sugya here is that so the halacha here is going to allocate loss to the party who is in a better position to have foreseen the onus as occurring, or the party who is in a better position to have speculated about the onus occurring. And that party is going to be the one to bear the loss, because that party is the one who should have made some stipulation, some tenai, about what should happen in a case of onus. And I think that's the Gemara's distinction between sairei la'arami d'orsa and lo sairei la'arami d'orsa. So the idea here is, look, I hire workers to till the field, and then the rain makes performance impossible. So who was responsible between the Baal HaBayis and the Poalim to have made some stipulation about what should happen in a case of impossible performance due to the field being swamped? So if the Poalim never saw the field, right, so lo sairei la'arami d'orsa, then they have no idea about the specific features of the field. They have no idea about its soil saturation capacity. And so the onus is on the Baal HaBayis. The Baal HaBayis has the burden to make stipulations about, hey, if it rains and the field's going to be saturated, don't show up to work, you're not going to be paid. But if it's sairei la'arami d'orsa, right, and he pointed out to the Poalim and said, this is the field that you're going to work, then now the Poalim have information about whether the field is workable, and the loss now is going to be theirs. Because once they see the field, the burden is now on them to know the characteristics of the field, and therefore it becomes their loss to bear. You can see Rashi and Ayin Vav Amud Beis says that in a case of sairei la'ara lo havi yehivna leklal, dimazalaihu garam, okay, it's the poel's loss. It's interesting, the formulation of mazalaihu garam we'll talk about in a little bit, but right now I'm just going to translate it as it's the poel's loss to bear. The inhu nami havalahu la sukeya dataihu, now that they've seen the field, they should have known that it's unworkable, and therefore the loss is theirs to bear. Now, so the significance, I would say, of Sairilar and Losar Midorsa is in terms of allocating the loss based on who possesses the information about how a certain condition will affect the performance of the contract, and whoever possesses that information has the halachic burden of making conditions about it. So that's just you'll see, I'll give further support for it in a second, but that's the main theory that I want to advocate in reading these cases in the Gemara. Anybody have comments on that before we move on? Gabe, you have a thought on this? I can unmute you. Gabe, I'm going to unmute you. Gabe, you have thoughts? Gabe?
They reflect from the Rishonim, which we'll see later. So.
Okay, good. So let's go on. I just want to make one point here. Rashi uses the phrase of mazalayu garam. So the Poalim bear the loss because like their mazal caused it. You'll see in a lot of like the literature, people who comment about these sugyas, they take this to be some theological principle. Right? Literally, who's theological mazel caused the loss, like, you know, the Bona Shalom made this onus happen because of, you know, something about the mazel of one party. I don't think that's the right interpretation. You can see there's a Rashi in Ksuvis and Bezim et Aleph, where it talks about, remember the wedding case we discussed last Chabura, where the wedding gets postponed, and the question is the husband chayiv to start supporting the wife? Is a good nafkamina for Ben? Does Ben have chiyuv mizonos starting from his May wedding date, or is he pater until June? But since Ben, it looks like he's being supported by a good southern hospitality, it doesn't seem like he's bearing the costs of mizonos right now. Ben, you can put your future in-laws in touch with me, and I'll get them to start hitting you up for the chiyuv mizonos starting mid-May. All right. So Rashi here talks about that if something happens to the wife, she gets sick before the wedding such that they have to postpone it, it's nistachba sadeyu shalabal. We view it as the husband's field, which is flooded. And he says, kilomar mazol chagaram. It's the husband's mazel, or the husband-to-be's mazel, which caused the loss. Kime hayom ani mutelos alechalazun. Because you have a duty to start supporting me from the day of the wedding. So I just want to point out that Rashi here explains mazol chagaram just in terms of the principle of loss allocation. It's not that mazol chagaram and therefore you have a chiyuv to pay. No, what we mean by mazol chagaram is the fact that antecedently it's your loss, because it's your loss to bear, therefore we view it as mazol chagaram, right? So it's because mehayom ani mutelos alecha lazon, because you fundamentally have the duty to support me, we view it, the wife's getting sick, as mazal chagaram. It's not that mazal chagaram determines liability, it's that the determination of liability, it's that liability determines whose mazal we view as being responsible. So I just think that's an important point in understanding what the Rishonim here mean when they talk about mazal chagaram. Okay, so the Rush in Bav Mitzia and Perek Vav, Simon Gimel, I think supports my reading that we're going to allocate the loss to the party who's in a better position to have foreseen and therefore have stipulated about the, made stipulations about the onus. You can see the Rush here in Vav Gimel says, Elo sire la Arab say to the Balabayas, if they didn't survey the land, as the Balabayas is lost to bear. Why? Lefi shebal habayas makir es arzo, V'yodeya d'chiyasa mitra lo chazi l'rifka. Right? The Baal Bayis is the one who knows the features of his field, and therefore, he's the one who had the burden to foresee how the rain would impact the contract. Okay? V'hapoalim lo hikiru es arzo. Right? And if the poalim didn't survey the field, they have no information about the water its water tolerability and how water saturation affects the work. And so they don't have the burden of making these stipulations. So I think this idea of the rush is even a clearer formulation that liability will be assigned based off this idea of who possesses the better information about makir es arzo. Balabayas makir es arzo, and the poalim lo hikiru es arzo, unless sire la'ara midorsa. Anybody have comments on just that analysis of the rush? Any thoughts on my reading of the Rush?
When you say that that it's makir arzo, are you saying that that's him being able to best foresee it? Or
yeah.
Are you not saying that?
Yeah.
You are.
Meaning, because he knows the features of his field, he's the one who should have made stipulations about what should happen in a case of, you know, a thunderstorm, a light drizzle, a serious rain, etc., etc. All right? Good. Okay, so let's move on a little bit. The Rambam has a slightly different reading of our sugya. I'll come back to the Rambam's reading, but first I want to get out the main theory here across the different cases in our sugya. So the Gemara in Bamitzia Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph gives us another case, and the case says, Amar Rava, Hai man de oger agure ledavla, the Asa Mitra say to the Poalim. So, a slightly different case. In this case, you're not hiring workers to till the field. You're hiring workers to water the field. And then rain comes, and it does the Poalim's job for them. Right? So, the pollen were supposed to water it, but then the rain does their job for them, are they entitled to be compensated? You can see Rashi says ladavla is lahashko sasados, and viasa mitra means vehishko sabena tzricha ladavla. So the Gemara here says that it's said of the pollen. It's the pollen's loss to bear. Now Tosas on Ayin Zayin is a long discussion. Does this depend on Sairil Ara? Lo Sairil Ara Medorsa. But the Gemara says it's the pseida de polem. So why is this the pseida de polem? Why is it the polem's lost to bear in this case? Anybody know? Anybody know why it's the polem's lost to bear? So we'll see that the Rishonim take this to be... Ben, do you know why it's the polem's lost to bear in this case? So we'll see that the Rishonim will say that in contrast to the first case that we saw... in the first case, assuming the Balabayas did not show the pole in the field, the Balabayas is in the better position to know how rain saturation affects the ability to till the field. It takes a certain level of expertise and knowledge about the specific features of the field to know how the rain will affect the labor. But when it comes to just having to water the field, the Gemara assumes that neither party is in a better position to know how rain will affect the field's need to be watered. Everybody knows if you're going to water a field and it rains, the field doesn't need to be watered the next day. So both the Balabayas and the Poel are in equal position. And when the parties are in equal position, the Poel bears the loss. And we'll see that some Rishonim say this based off some idea of Motzi Mecharu al Varaya, which we'll elaborate in a minute. But we could just take the Gemara here as outlining the idea that and when it comes to rain rendering watering the field unnecessary, the parties are in equal position, and when they're in equal position, the pseida is that of the poel, for reasons we'll discuss shortly. Donnie has a hand.
Yeah, this might be a little nitpicky, but a thought just came up into my head. Is there any specific reason why the Gemara used the term that the surveying happened at night?
Yeah.
Seems a little strange, especially because if we're saying that the surveying is happening to like see the specifics of the field and what conditions have to be set or stipulations have to be set, maybe night, especially back then when you don't have lights and stuff like that, how are you going to be able to see those specifics?
Yeah, it's a good point, though the Rishonim here assume that night wasn't making it more difficult for them to survey it. You could see Rash. I think it just means like the day. They mean in the sense the day before, you know, when you're hiring the workers, they surveyed it with you. You could see Rash.
I guess it's just strange because like why doesn't it just say like the day before, not like the night? It seems a little strange.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Rash. If you look at Rashi here has his own reading, which seems to suggest that the Balabayas. Which almost changes the facts of the case slightly, where Rashi understands it, that the Balabayas brought the Polim to the field the night before. He said, I want you guys to work this field. And I guess he said, I want you to work this field tomorrow or something. And the Polim should have discerned that the field already that night was flooded. He says two things. V'holecha Polim l'sham v'ra'uhu v'lo hevinu shehilecha o sheyardu g'shamim balayla las lohu klal. So it sounds like Rashi's saying that maybe because it was night, the Polim didn't do a good enough survey to like ascertain whether the field would be saturated should it rain later in the night. And so the night thing is just trying to like give a factual circumstance that would explain why the Polim showed up to work in some negligent way, not having known that performance was impossible.
Oh, meaning like if it was done during the day, like obviously they would have done a good survey and see that this was.
Yeah, I think that's what Rashi's trying to say.
Yeah, but Rashi's saying that it's still the surveying could have been done; they just were negligent in the survey.
Exactly. So for our purposes, it's the same, right?
Wow. Okay. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Good. So in the second case that we just saw, the Gemara seems to be saying. And I'll see this more explicitly than we show them later, that both parties should have known that when I hire workers to water the field, rain would make performance unnecessary. And when both parties are in the same position, it's the Powell's loss to bear. Now that itself is interesting, why it should be the Powell's loss to bear. We'll see Rishon phrase this in terms of Motzei Mechaber Al Baraya, which we'll have to explain. The Gemara then gives us a third case. This is a 9 Zayin Amud Aleph. So you hire workers to water the field, but instead of the rain coming to discharge or to render their performance unnecessary, what happens is a river overflows, okay? And the overflowing of the river, at least on Rashi's reading, waters the field for the Poalim, right? The banks of the river just, they overflowed, and I guess the water trickled down through these little creeks and irrigation ditches, and so there's no longer a need to water the field. So the Gemara here says that's Pseida de Bala Bias. Okay, so why should we distinguish between the rain case, which is Pseida de Poalim, and the river overflowing case, which is Pseida de Bala Bias? What's the basis for that distinction? Yakir, you have a sense for why we would distinguish?
Rashi's reading, or
yeah, give us Rashi's reading.
Just that rain is that there's the Nahar is more knowledge based. There's more knowledge has to go into how the river overflowing will affect the fields than rain does.
Well, yes, and specifically, who would have knowledge about the river?
Right. The
Baal Bias would have a knowledge about the river. So. Yeah, that's exactly right, the Baal Bias. So Rashi here seems to be saying that when it comes to rain rendering the rendering performance unnecessary, both parties are in equal position to know how the rain would impact it. But when it comes to this local river suddenly overflowing and whether that's going to trickle down to water the field, that's the kind of knowledge that the Bala Bias would uniquely possess, right? Say to the Bala Bias, why? Depolim einam yodin biminag sadehu sheyehe nahar ola lahashkoso achu hayodeya. Excuse me. Because the Bala Bias is in the position to know how the river would affect his field, the burden was on him to have made some stipulation about how it would affect performance, and his failure to make stipulations about it means that it's going to be his liability. So I think this is also like a nice, almost a clear formulation where liability is assigned on the basis of who possesses the superior information. Okay? Now we'll see later the Rashba has a different reading of this sugya. We'll come back to that reading a bit later. First, I just want to get out this main theory that I want to develop. Anybody have questions on just these two cases, the rain case versus the river case, and how Rashi interprets it? Everyone good? Okay. So let's look at the fourth case. Okay.
Sorry, you two want
it? Yeah.
Does, when we talk about like the Balabite knowing in advance that these things are possible, is part of that like mitigating the degree to which it's really an onus? Meaning, some onus is like momish onus. Some onus is, we know that fields, you know, that rivers overflow occasionally and water the fields.
Yeah.
Is that at all a factor, or is it just about like contracting around potential, you know, anything that might happen, no matter how likely or unlikely?
So that's a really good point. I think we should distinguish between onus in two different senses. So there's onus in terms of was this unforeseeable? Right? And I think, you know, generally speaking, this is a kind of onus, right? No one's at fault here. It's not like let me put it to you. Onus, as in duress, can be used here in two separate senses. One is any party at fault for the non-performance, right? And the answer to that is no. It's not like one party spent the night watching Netflix and overslept and didn't make it to the job on time, right? So it's not like the reason why Yoni's not in Chabura today. Just kidding. No, I like that. It's not that kind of... What's that, Noah?
No. It's not true, that's what happened.
We'll find out.
I'm just kidding.
Right.
Should state for the record that that's not, well, we don't know, but that's hopefully not the reason.
I don't know about Yoni. I'm just saying I'm familiar with people who have done that in the past, and it would make sense to me.
Good.
If that were to happen.
I hear you, Noah. It's relative to that kind of thing. It's not onus, Yair. So neither party is strictly speaking at fault for the non-performance. But now we're asking a different question than we're saying, who's at fault for not having made a... Is any party at fault for not having made a provision for what should happen in a case of onus, right? So is any party, between the two parties, is any of them more poshea than the other in terms of having had a burden to make a stipulation about this? And now we're going to say yes, given that one of them possesses superior information, he's poshea for not having considered it, Yair. So in that sense, it does mitigate the onus, not the onus of the performance being rendered impossible, but the onus of... was there some Shia in formulating the agreement? Yair, does that help?
Yeah, it does. I'm still sort of rubbing my head around some of the
patients. Okay, got it. It's probably hard for you to try to wrap your head when you have that dragon pursuing you
in the background. Warm as well.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I guess the way I'm thinking about it is, if the only factor is what you're describing, then the question is just, what was this kind of onus foreseeable or not foreseeable? So, to throw a third example, let's say overnight, other polar bears run into the field and water it all for you. You get there in the morning.
Right, right.
So that's equally foreseeable by both parties.
100%.
I think it feels different than the possibility that it might rain.
Yeah.
Maybe from your perspective, it would be exactly the same.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting point. You might say almost that what I'm interested in here is not so much fault, but a loss has to fall somewhere, and we're just, we have to assign it somewhere. So, one principle we could use is the principle we assessed in the last two chaburas about, who almost the owner of the malacha is, right? And now we're looking at a different principle and saying, no, maybe there's a different way of assigning the loss somewhere, and that's just, as between the two of them, who is in a better position to have foreseen it? So it's a separate principle for allocating losses. And maybe it's not that any party is particularly at fault. It's just a principle to help us decide where to let the loss fall. Does that help, Yair?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So let's look now at the fourth case in the Sugya. We have the Gemara in Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph. So we have a case of Rava, Amar Rava. Haiman de Oger Agure Ladavla, you hire workers again to water the field. And here the assumption is that they were going to water the field from a local river. Okay? And what happens is, so they were going to travel to the river, they had their buckets, and they were going to water the field. But then Upasak Nahara Bipalga Dioma, the river dries up in the middle of the day, and it renders their performance impossible, right? They have no source from which to water the well. So the Gemara says, Ilo avid de pasik, if this was really unusual, right? Totally unexpected, neither party could have foreseen it, say the depoalim, it's the workers' loss to bear. But avid de pasik, if this river sometimes dries up, so it was foreseeable, ibn a masa, Pseida de Poalim, if the Poalim are members of the community and therefore possess information, they know that this river sometimes dries up, it's the river's loss to bear. It's the Poalim's loss to bear. La b'nei masa, if the workers are from out of town and therefore wouldn't have any information about the habits of the river, Pseida de Balabais, it becomes the Balabais' loss to bear. So this last case gives us the most information about what the underlying halachic principle is here, right? What do you take the underlying halachic principle to be here from this last case of Pasak Nara Bepalga Dioma? Gabe, you want to help us out a little bit? Gabe?
Sorry, I missed that last point, didn't
you? What do you take to be the underlying point that we get from the Pasak Nara Bepalga Dioma case? Like, what's the underlying halachic principle?
So that one says haskalas malacha.
No. Nothing about haskalas malacha yet. We don't know that there's haskalas malacha here. Okay, so let's hold off. We'll hold off on Gabe. You could even ask Maytal.
Okay, I'm gonna pass to somebody else.
You could phone Maytal. No?
Maytal's definitely on the phone.
Okay, she's here already. Okay, so anybody else, what do we get from that? What do we get from that sugya? What's the principle that we could take away from it? Ben, you want to help us?
Oh, really? Dependent upon the knowledge of Shia.
So for sure, it depends on knowledge, but specifically in what sense? The Gemara here seems to say that if both parties. If the Baal HaBayis possesses superior information, right, only the Baal HaBayis is a member of the town, so only he would know the habits of the river, then it becomes his loss to bear because he has superior information. But if both the Baal HaBayis and the workers are members of the same town, and both are in equal position to have foreseen or to have speculated about the river drying up, then whose loss is it to bear? According to the Sugya? No. Remember, the sugya says that.
Sorry, maybe I misheard you.
So, if they're both in equal position, right? They're both members of the town, right? And therefore, they both know the habits of the river. It's the Poalim's loss to bear, right? So the question is.
Oh yes, sorry, I misheard you.
Yeah. So this sugya is a very nice, very clear statement of two principles. A, that when one party possesses superior information, that party will bear the loss, i.e. if the Baal HaBayis is a B'nai Masa, and therefore he has superior information about the river's habits, he's the one who has to bear the loss when the river dries up. But if the parties are in equipoise, meaning both parties are equally situated to either see or not see the loss, then the Pseida is that of the Poalim. That's what we get from the sugya, which means that the halacha here really presumptively favors the Baal HaBayis over the Poalim, right? It's going to presumptively place the loss on the Poalim when the parties are in equipoise. And we want to know why should that be, okay? So here's where the Rishonim step in, and they offer the following explanation. We have the Rashi here in Perek Vav Simen Gimel, and he gives us a nice statement of the general rule. He says, citing this case where the river dries up, Kol unsa deloi boile asuke datayu lo poel velo Baal HaBayis. If it's an ones that neither party should have specifically foreseen, inami truvayu iboiluhu lasuke datayu. Or both of them should have foreseen it, but equally so, right? Both parties should have known that this might happen. Pseida de Poalim. Then the Poalim bear the loss. Dehamotzi mechaveru alav haraya v'yado al tachtona. Because of the idea of hamotzi mechaveru alav haraya. Okay? But if the river... If one party possesses superior information, so like the Baal HaBayis is specially situated to know about it, so if like the Poalim are B'nai Masa Achriti, it's Pseida de Baal HaBayis, notice the formulation, De'iboyile le Baal HaBayis le'isnuye, because then the Baal HaBayis who had the better information, he should have made the T'nai about what should happen in the case. So I've been reading this last phrase into my analysis of the sugya until now. Ibaile las nuye. But this is the first time we're seeing it explicitly in the Rishonim, that the significance of better information is with respect to having the burden of making a tnai about this when the contract was entered into. Okay, so the Rush here in Vav Gimel just has a really clear formulation of the two principles that we've developed today. The first being loss allocation on the basis of the party having the better information, having a duty to make the stipulation. And the second principle, that when the parties are in equipoise, the poalim bear the loss because of some idea of hamotzi mechaber olav araya v'yado atachtona, which we still have to flesh out. Okay, anybody have comments on just that idea of the Rush?
Yeah, to jump in for a second, is there a difference between hayalo and hayalo lehachno?
Yeah, so that's a really good point here. You see, I was reading, so I think in terms of, strictly speaking, I think yes. Ibaile lasnuye is the idea that I've been suggesting throughout, right? He should have made the tanai. If you go back to Rashi's formulation, which Gabe is pointing us to, you almost get, Rashi said Ibaile lo duye, right, Gabe?
Yeah.
Let's go back to Rashi in the first sugya. Yeah, lo sara meursa olav hayalaseis leiv ledavar ulahodiyam. Right, that's Rashi's. The Baal HaBayis should have notified them. I think if you just take Rashi Kipshuto, it almost sounds like he's thinking not in terms of who had the duty to make a provision or stipulation about this in the contract negotiations, but he's thinking like in terms of nezek, that the Baal HaBayis had a duty to call up the poalim when he saw that the field was flooded, to warn them that they can't do any work today so that they could try to get alternative labor elsewhere. And he's thinking that if the Baal HaBayis didn't do that, maybe he's mazik them in some way by depriving them of the opportunity to find work somewhere else. Does that make sense, Gabe? So for Rashi, I think you might even say that Rashi may not be reading the sugya the way I am and the way the Rush is, but Rashi is thinking just in terms of pure nezek. Did the Baal HaBayis harm the poalim by not warning them the second he found out that the field was unworkable to try to get them to find alternative labor by somebody else?
Yeah, so I hear that reading of Rashi, and I think that makes sense. Just to suggest something else, which I'm not sure works exactly in this Rashi, but might work in other contexts, is similar to the reading that I put forth within the Haram, that the more information you have, the more you're sort of committing, when you accept the contract, you're committing to accepting a certain amount of risk. So as long as you are fully aware of the risks going into the contract, then the Baal HaBayis is entitled to pay for a kid's loan.
Okay, so you're saying that the more knowledge you...
Perfect information helps because then everybody's on the same page about like what they can expect or what the possibilities or the risks are, how likely it is for certain outcomes to happen.
Yeah. That's a really good point, Gabe. So do you think, I don't think that's inconsistent with my reading, right? Because the reason why we're going to allocate the loss to the party with the better information, yes, that's right. So you might say is because of your explanation that this party knew there was this possibility of this happening. And if he didn't make a condition about it, we'll just assume that he factored that into his acceptance of the contract.
Yeah.
Is that right, Gabe?
That's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, I like that. I like that suggestion a lot. I think it's consistent with what I'm saying. I wonder, though, how you would explain why, when the parties are in equipoise, we put the burden on the poalim. Right, because they're...
Yes, I think that might be... I don't have a perfect answer to that question, but I don't think those two questions are necessarily related.
Good, good. So Gabe's making a really interesting point here. Gabe's saying, we articulated two principles today. One is that the party with the better information bears the loss. Gabe's giving an explanation for that because of some sort of acceptance of risk. And then Gabe's saying, well, this other principle that we discussed today, that when the parties are in equipoise, the loss is on the motzi, on the poalim. Gabe's saying, well, that's just a different idea. It's not related to loss. It's not related to acceptance of risk. It's, there's going to be some separate reason for applying Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya in that case. Correct, Gabe?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, excellent. Good. So let's follow up on that point. So Gabe wants to suggest that maybe the Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya rule is distinct from the loss from the better information rule. I want to maybe suggest a slightly different idea, a slightly different variation on that. And it turns on how do we understand Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Haraya in this context. So you might say that Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya here is just being used as, well, yeah, you might say Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya here is just being used as a principle in adjudication, meaning when there's a dispute between two parties, the procedural rule is that the party who is the motzi bears the burden of proof. And so when the parties are in equipoise, the poel is trying to extract compensation from the baal habayis. He has an extra burden of proof, which he can't meet, and so then he loses. So the application of a motzi mechaver olav haraya in this case is at the procedural level in adjudication. Okay, I think that would be like the standard reading of hamotzi mechaver olav haraya. Is that correct? Yeah? Noah, sounds good to you? Yeah? Good. Donnie sounds good. Ben sounds good to you? Okay. Yair sounds good to you?
Sounds great.
Okay, good. Good. It's very...
sharp.
Yeah, very... This is very happy language from someone who's being pursued by that monster in the background.
I have a big piece of my fate.
I gotcha. I think, and so you might say that it would follow from that, that if there's some sort of tfisa, right, so the poel grabbed money from the baal habayis, then that would change the burden of proof at the procedural level in adjudication, right? At time t1, they enter this agreement. They're both in equal position to either have foreseen or not foreseen the onus. But the poel bears the burden of proof, so he's going to lose. But if the poel is toface money from the baal habayis in the interim, let's say at time T2, before the litigation, which takes place at time T3, you might say the poel will win because now he's holding onto the cash, right? And so that would shift the motzi mechaver olav haraya burden to the baal habayis, who's trying to extract payment from the poel now. He's trying to recover from the poel. So you can see this gets an interesting, this gets formulated interestingly in the Darkei Moshe and his comments on the tour. The tour in Simon Shin Lamed Dalid cites the Rush, who says again, Shneim Yodin or Shneim Einam Yodin HaPoel Mafsid, Shamotzi Mechaveru Olav Haraya V'Yadol Tachtona. And the Darkei Moshe in Shin Lamed Dalid there just points out he quotes the Truma Sadeshen in Simen Shin Chav Tes, Mashma she'im hiktim lo haschar, ein sarach lahachzir lo. That if the Baal Habayis paid the Poel, and let me just use this, let's say the Baal Habayis paid the Poel at some point in advance. Right, so let's not talk about tfisa. So let's say at time T1 they entered into contract negotiations. The poel started working, etc. And then at time T2 the baal habayis just pays him, you know, the rest of the contract in advance. And at time T3 they have a litigation about the onus. So the Tumas HaDeshen here seems to be saying, based off the Darkei Moshe's reading of it, if that happened, then who would win the case? The Poel would, because the Baal HaBayis now becomes the Motzi. And you can see the Pisrei Choshen in Ha'ara Beis here, in Perek Yud Beis, says that the same thing might be true for Tvisa, Shut Shvus Yaakov, Diek Midivri Ator, Shehu Adinim Tafas HaPoel Ein Motzi En Miyado. If there's some sort of Tvisa from the Poel's part, that would shift the burden onto the Baal HaBayis, and the Poel would win the case. Okay, I think that's like a standard reading of a Motzi Mechaber Alvaraya, that it exists at the litigation level in terms of procedurally who bears the burden of proof. Who do we lose? Have we lost Noah? Fanny, what happened to Noah?
Am I my brother's keeper?
Right. He just got lost. So, do any of you have thoughts on this, whether this Diak of the Shvus Yaakov is right, that Tfisa should shift the Motzi Mechaveru Alav Haraya burden, and that's the right interpretation of the Sugya? Or is there another way to interpret HaMotzi Mechaveru Alav Haraya here in this context? Gabe, you have a thought on this? Gabe? Yakir, let's hear. Yakir, you have a thought? Looks like Yakir might have stepped away for a second.
Doesn't that seem right to put the burden on my cousin?
Yeah. Yeah, Yakir, do you have a thought on this, or?
Sorry.
No problem.
Dealing with an unhappy toddler.
Okay, no problem. So that means it's not Uri this time. It's an Ami issue. Okay. Gabe, that wasn't nice to put the burden on Yakir.
I think Yakir, just wanna get it right, was suggesting that maybe Motzi Mechaveru Alav Haraya isn't paralysis and being suffix, so we think in the status quo, but that's actually like an acre and then because I think the way you said it was we sort of throw the contract out because we're not really sure, because she had both sides, even though it's reading the artificial fund. And so we just kind of like, we annul the contract and then make it a status quo.
That's a really interesting idea. I have to think about that a little more. I like that suggestion a lot. I like that it makes it more Meikar Adin. I have a slightly different reading here, which is Meikar Adin, but not as extreme as saying that we're going to throw out the contract. I think one way you could read Amotz Meichaver Alav Haraya here is along the lines that we've been reading the superior information discussion, that brings the two principles together. So I think what you can say is that as between the Poel and the Baal HaBayis, so when they're negotiating on the contract, we view the Poel as the Motzi. Why? Because the Poel is the one, so in a case of Ones that's going to render performance impossible, the Poel is considered to be the Motzi because he's the one who has to justify being entitled to compensation without any performance. Right? So if there's going to be a form of impossibility that renders performance impossible, the Poel is the one who has the burden to make some stipulation to say that he's entitled to be paid without performance. So when the original negotiations for the contract are underway, as between the two of them, who has the burden to make a stipulation when they're in equipoise to justify compensation in the absence of performance, it's always going to be the Poel because the unequal position of the two parties at the outset. The Poel has a special burden of being Motzi, of justifying an entitlement to be paid without performance. So I think On that reading, Amotamech Haber Olav Haraya here is not being used as a principle at the adjudicatory level, procedurally, when there's a dispute, who has the burden of proof. Rather, in this case, it's being used at the level of at the moment of negotiations, in terms of loss allocation, which of the parties has the greater burden in general to make a stipulation about entitlement to being paid absent performance. And that burden is always going to fall on the poel, because he's the one who has to justify an entitlement to extracting money from the balabais without providing a service in return. So I think in that sense, so first of all, one important ramification is that tfisa would not help the poel, because tfisa after the contract negotiations doesn't change the dynamics about who had the burden to make a stipulation or a provision about whether there's entitlement to be paid absent performance, right? After the fact, tfisa only helps at the adjudicatory level. But that's not what's at bar here, right? The significance of Amotamei Chaver Olav Haraya in this sugya is about imposing the burden of almi hayalis snuye, which wouldn't be affected by a later claim of tfisa. Yeah, Kira, you have a hand?
Another maneuver is possible here, which I think is the first thing that Truma Sadashin is going to use.
Yeah.
Which is that Amos Mefer Alharia is regular, but because both parties are aware of the reality of Amos Mefer Alharia, and both parties are aware when they sign the contract that if in case of onus, the poel stands to lose. Therefore, there's, I think the transition language is implicit in Mechila, but therefore the poel now bears the burden of making the t'nai just because of the anticipation of the regular variety.
Yeah. That's a nice way of formulating it. That's like a sharp, that's like a middle ground between the way I'm formulating it and procedural Hamotzei Mechavero, right?
Yeah.
But I wonder, let's look at the language in the Trumas HaDeshen here in Simen Shin Chaf Tes. We actually came across this part of this Trumas HaDeshen in other contexts. We'll read the whole thing later, but I just want to, the formulation here I think is striking. He quotes the position of the Rush, he cites it B'Shem Tosfos, that if both parties are in equipoise, either to have foreseen or not have foreseen the ones, the burden's on the poel. Why? The poelim have the burden in this case. The burden to have, they bear the loss because they should have made some stipulation about it when they were negotiating about the contract to argue or to justify that they're not sacrificing their schar if an ones occurs. See, so I think, first of all, that this formulation certainly militates against the procedural formulation of Motzei Mechaber Olav Haraya, right? It's really just about determining who had the burden b'shas negotiations to make the stipulation. And I think he's saying that I think his formulation leans more into my formulation than into Yakir's. It's not the threat of the procedural burden that makes him have to stipulate Bishas tonight, but rather it's just the fact that there's a presumption that payment in general is in exchange for services. And if you want to make this more outrageous claim that you're entitled to be paid without performance at all, well, the burden is on you to make that stipulation. You're trying to justify an entitlement that you're prima facie not entitled to. So I think that's a very nice... That's how I would prefer to read the Trumas HaDeshen. And then it brings the Motzei Chaver Olav Haraya idea in line with the superior information principle, right? they're both procedures for, two different procedures, but they're both procedures for determining ex ante, at the moment of negotiations, who bears or who bore the burden for making a stipulation about this. Yeah, somebody has a comment. Gabe, you have a comment?
Yeah, I was wanted to ask what happened to like Scarpa, Butel. This seems like to be a weak formulation of contractual obligations.
Yes. So that's a really good point. So Gabe's telling us that the thrust of the sugya on Ayin Vav, Ayin Zayin that we've been discussing today seems to be almost in tension, directly in tension, with our analysis of the prior sugya, where it seemed to be more a function of the nature of the contract, right? Who owns the, is there a hakna, samalacha? Is it like a mechira? Is it like a property right? Whereas today, it sounds more like we're allocating the loss on the basis of superior information, motzmei chaver al v'raya. And what's more is that the motzmei chaver al v'raya principle itself seems to be in tension with the hakna principle. Is that right, Gabe?
I can't say I intended all of that, but I agree with your point.
Yeah. But is that's consistent with the point that you're making?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good point. So does anybody have thoughts on Gabe's aura here? How to reconcile these two? I would say one thing we could say is just that these are I have an answer. The answer partly depends on which cases is this sugya discussing. Was there a kinyan here? Was there not a kinyan here? And you'll see we're going to get to that when we talk about this. We're going to talk about that in the next chabura when we talk about the stira to the sugya and gittin ayin dalet amud beis, and how to reconcile this sugya that we saw today with the sugya and gittin ayin dalet, and the discussion in Tosfos and the Rif and the Ravid and the Ramban over there. So Gabe, I think that's a really excellent question. But I think the answer to that question is going to be subject to how the Rishonim answer this stira to the sugya and gittin. So I think we should stay tuned until we answer that question.
Okay,
good. So make sure we explicitly address that that point in the next chabura. Okay?
I'll do my best.
Good. Let me just make one closing point here. I'll make two closing points. Three closing points. just three closing points. Closing point number one is that in the language of the Chumash Hadashah that we still haven't read through, but we're going to read through, not today. Excuse me, in Siman Shin Chaf Tes, is again in line with that formulation of the Rush and the reading that I've been pushing in the Sugya, that superior knowledge and Emotzi Mechaver Al V'Raya are all just factors in that determine which party had the burden to make a stipulation. You could see here in that Tshuva, he says, the Pseida goes to Shimon. Why? The Pseida goes to Reuven. Why? Because Reuven have yada tfe, whatever, mi Shimon, the ihu have la snuye. The party knew this fact greater than Shimon, and therefore the burden was on him to make some stipulation about it. Again, later on in the tshuva, or earlier in the tshuva, he has similar formulations about inhu havala snuye in balabayas because of reason X, Y, or Z. So he's in line with the Rush that this is all about who should have made the Tanai. And we'll see later in the Ramban in Gittin, in the Mochamos, he also reads the significance of havale, the superior information in similar terms. The second hara I want to make is just to reiterate Gabe's hara that he made a minute ago. And that is, Gabe pointed out that this idea of who should have made, the absence of making a condition when you were supposed to, is a kind of mechila, which I think Gabe is right to interpret in terms of acceptance of risk. Right? Hachanami kivan desfir lan de poalim hava luhu lasnuye, since the poalim had the duty to make a condition, midelo asni nema de machlu al ha'ones. Right? So Gabe, that's the formulation you were pointing to that shows that not making the condition when you're supposed to is a implicit acceptance of risk. Is that right, Gabe?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And then just the third and last point that I wanted to make is to go back to the formulation in the Rush, citing the Ravya. Just a nice extension of this principle to a new case, not in the Gemara, but just a similar case. Umikan pasak Rabbeinu Yoel, based off the principles of the sugya, Misha Sachar Milamid Levno V'chala HaTalmid. So you hire a teacher to teach your child, and the son gets sick. Ilo Shchiach D'chala Pseidat D'Milamid. If it's not common for the child to get sick, it's the Milamid's loss. Why is it the Milamid's loss? Because neither party has superior information. The Milamid is the Poel. And therefore, all things being equal, it's the Poel's burden to make a Tanai. The Ishchiach Dechala, if the child frequently gets sick, then it depends whether the Milamid lives in the town and knows that this child frequently gets sick, right? So if the Poel lives in the town and he's Makir Inyan HaTalmid, it's Pedah de Milamid. Because then the parties are in equal position. The father knows that his son gets sick. The Rebbe here knows that this child often gets sick. And therefore, in Motzmei Chavrel V'Raya, the Melamed should have made a Tanai. The Ilo Shchiach B'Masa, if the Melamed doesn't know anything about the child's sickness habits, then it's Pseida the Balabayas, V'yayiv Lohu Schar Mishalim, because the Balabayas has the better information, and he should have made the Tanai. He should have made the Tanai about it. So that's what I wanted to discuss today. I just wanted to analyze the principles based off superior information, Motzmei Chavrei Olav Haraya, that come out of our Sugya 9, Vav, and Ayin Zayin. This is a different principle from the one we discussed in the last Chabura, which makes liability depend on who the owner, who owns the property right of the contract is. And I think Gabe is right to leave us with this question: how do we reconcile our discussion from the last sugya with this sugya? And that's going to be our topic in the next Chabura, which gets taken up in the Rishonim and how they reconcile our discussion today with the sugya in Gittin, Ayin, Dalet, and Beis. So take a look at this sugya in Gittin, Ayin, Dalet, and Beis. Take a look at the Trumas HaDeshen inside. And we'll pick up at that discussion on Tuesday. Let me just ask you guys, do you think we should take a break for a week or two during finals? Do people have finals or smicha exams and things like that? Should we take like a 2-week break or just go straight through May to June? Anybody have a strong sense?
I have no more work for anything.
All right. Ben wants us to go straight through to the wedding.
That morning.
Right. Donnie, do you care? Do you have a preference?
I don't think I have a preference. This was my busiest week, I think, for the next month. So
okay.
I did.
Great. Yeah, here it is. Do you have a preference?
No, I should be fine.
Okay, either is fine. Yeah, Kira, you have a preference?
No.
No?
Going straight through is good
with me. Okay, you don't have like math exams to grade or something?
No.
Okay. Gabe, how about you?
No preference. Okay. I mean, I prefer to go straight through.
That's a committed Talmud. All right, Yasher Koach, everybody. We'll pick up on Tuesday. All right? It's today Thursday, everybody. Wow. All right, everybody, have a good Shabbos. Nice to see you all. And see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Good Shabbos.
Have a good Shabbos.